The focus of my paper will be on the ekphrasis of the Cosmikos Pinax by John of Gaza, a lengthy verse description of an elaborate cosmological depiction once seen in a winter bath, probably in the author's hometown of Gaza. The text itself, and especially the picture it described, have received relatively little attention in scholarship. This is the case despite the early availability of editions of the poem, particularly the one published by Paul Friedländer in 1912. This edition is accompanied by an erudite commentary focusing on questions of iconography and by a graphic reconstruction of the lost picture. Friedländer's reconstruction was soon challenged by Gerhard Kramer, who in a book published in 1920 provided a second drawing different from that of Friedländer in important aspects. The differences regarding the practicalities of reconstructing the lost picture are, of course, largely owed to the well-known pitfalls posed by rhetorical descriptions. In this case, at most 50% of the text is descriptive in a strict sense, and there remain all the ambiguities that are typical of a literary genre aiming to bring the thing described vividly before one's eye. As far as iconography is concerned, the two early studies by Friedländer and Kramer remain the fundamental works of reference until today. However, being published early in the 20th century, a number of works of art that are crucial for comparison were either not yet unearthed or not sufficiently published. Also, it seems significant that both scholars were trained as classicists. The ekphrasis probably composed around the year 500, as was the picture it describes, were thus analyzed by scholars approaching the material from the perspective largely determined by Greco-Roman art and culture. Only in very recent years has the ekphrasis of the Cosmikos Pinax once again attracted scholarly attention of a more substantial kind. It is now being approached from a primarily philological perspective, especially in a series of articles published by Daria Gili, who is also currently working on a new commented edition of the text, including its translation into Italian, which will be its first complete translation into a modern language. While revisiting some of the questions that have already been addressed by others, my chief aim for today's paper is to analyze and value the lost Cosmikos Pinax as a rare visual testimony for the continuity and adaptation of pagan iconography in the early Christian period. More specifically, approaching the topic from the perspective of a medieval art historian, I'm particularly interested to draw attention to the Christian elements that were interspersed into a composition largely derived from the illustrations of classical myth. Previous scholarship has tended either to underestimate the significance of the Christian motifs included in the cosmological image, or simply to deny their presence altogether. I propose that the lost depiction of the cosmos, thanks to its description by John of Gaza, significantly enriches our understanding of the phenomena of continuity and change that are so characteristic of late antiquity. I will argue that certain developments in the realm of iconography that may be observed in the decades around the year 500 need to be looked at from a different and less biased perspective. Also, it seems important that the processes of transformation and intercultural exchange we observe in the visual arts around that time continue to resonate in the iconography of later centuries, both in Byzantium and in the Christian West. Numerous uncertainties surround the ekphrasis of the Cosmikos Pinax, its author, the date, as well as the place and occasion of its public performance. Equally obscure and in need of explanation is a lost work of art itself. This applies not only to the iconographic details of the composition, its overall size and artistic technique, but likewise to its precise location and date of origin. The sole surviving testimony of the text forms part of the Anthologia Palatina, where it is entitled, quote, "Description by John Grammaticos of Gaza, of the picture of the world in the winter bath," unquote. Very little is known about the author, and it must be said that the scholarly discussion regarding him is based almost exclusively on a series of lemmata belonging to the 10th century, which were added in the margins of the text. John's work certainly postdates the Dionysiaca of Nonnos, from which the author borrowed heavily, especially as regards style and language. John is thus indeed likely to have been a representative of the famous school of rhetoric at Gaza during its heyday. Most authors see him as a contemporary of Procopius of Gaza, who left two ekphrases of monuments of art in the same city, the description of a splendid horologe and a cycle of mythological paintings seen on the walls of a public palace. According to one of the lemmata found in the Palatine anthology, the same cosmological depiction was also mentioned by Procopius, and if we take this note at face value, the picture must have been in place by roughly 530. As may be gleaned from different writing by Corycius of Gaza, at his time the city housed several public baths, buildings of remarkable splendor, including at least two that served for the winter season. However, this is what one would expect from a major city like Gaza, and unfortunately, archaeological evidence that would help to clarify issues of the time and location of the picture is lacking altogether. The ekphrasis of the Cosmicos Pinax is a text of considerable scope, consisting of two main parts that are roughly equal in length and comprise more than 700 hexameters. Each part is preceded by a short iambic proem, and two brief invocations for poetic inspirations are placed at the very beginning of the text. The proem preceding part one informs the reader that the text represents a public speech originally delivered by John as a sort of final exam following a request by his professors. The topic of the description was also specified by his teachers, namely, quote, to describe in verse the picture with its renderings of cosmic powers composed by the ingenious artist, where he represented in corporeal nature by means of anthropomorphic depictions. This explicitly allegorical understanding of the composition is crucial for the interpretation of the picture and its cultural context, and I will return to this point later. Both the artistic medium and the technique in which the picture was executed are unknown. John refers to the composition twice using the word icon, which unfortunately may mean about anything. In one instance, the artist is referred to as Graphius, which has led most scholars to the conclusion that the picture must have been a painting rather than a mosaic, on the grounds of the identical vocabulary used in the Greek language to denote writing and painting. However, I would like to suggest that John's choice of the word Graphius might as well have been intended as an intelligent pun alluding to the popular notion encountered in the Progymnasmata that those taking up the literary description of a work of art, in doing so, enter a contest with the artist. I believe that this idea is also reflected in the fact that John, in one instance, refers to the tool of the artist as a kalamos. Hence, I think that the question of whether the Cosmicos Pinax was a wall painting or a mosaic, unfortunately, cannot ultimately be solved on the basis of the text. Given the public location of what must have been an outstanding, widely appreciated work of art, most authors probably justly took it for granted that the lost Cosmicos Pinax was a composition of considerable dimensions, a monumental work most likely applied to a wall, dome, or vault of the bath building that housed it. The fact that the picture is in the very title of the ekphrasis termed Pinax has prompted some scholars to assume that it might have been a large panel painting. However, it must be said that Pinax might as well allude to the iconography of the picture, as the word also denotes geographical or astronomical tablets. Consisting mainly of personifications embodying elements of heaven and earth, the picture might well have been perceived as a sort of map of the world in the broadest sense. The composition represented one of the richest arrays of allegorical figures known from late antiquity. I find it thus tempting to understand Pinax in yet another meaning of the word, that is, as a reference to a visual catalogue comprehending a more or less complete set of personifications embodying the universe. I would not exclude the possibility that the term Pinax was deliberately chosen by John in the title to encompass multiple meanings and associations, but I think it is very unlikely that it was intended as a reference to the pictorial medium. The complex depiction that visualized the various forces of nature must have comprised 50 to 60 anthropomorphic figures, many of which were arranged in groups. Throughout, the author provides detailed descriptions of the individual figures, many of which apparently corresponded to standard iconography established long ago in mythological art of the Greco-Roman period. Very often, the author refers to details of color, costume, or attributes and discusses identifying inscriptions, labels that were added to at least some of the figures, if not all. The two attempts that have hitherto been made to reconstruct the lost painting of the cosmos at Gaza, graphically and with great attention to figural detail, could hardly be more different. The difficulties both scholars faced are, of course, chiefly owed to the known fact that ancient literary descriptions followed methods and guidelines that differed significantly from the systematic approaches expected by modern scholarship. As is so often the case in ancient and medieval ekphrasis of works of art, that of the Cosmicos Pinax too lacks crucial information of a very basic nature. I have already addressed the complications manifest in the text regarding the picture's artistic medium and technique. What we also lack are reliable hints as to the precise location of the composition within the complex architectural structures that usually characterize the public baths of ancient cities. Its approximate size and shape are equally open to conjecture, and the same often holds true regarding the precise location and interaction of individual figures or groups. Friedländer envisaged the picture on a flat surface on the upper part of a wall of semicircular shape. In contrast, Kramer imagined a circular composition arranged in a dome, an interpretation that has been favored by most, if not all, later authors. I cannot embark here on the questions raised by the existing reconstructions of the painting in regard to its general layout or problems concerning iconographical details of its mythological figures. But it is perhaps useful to offer at least a brief outline of the major contents of the picture. Numerous figures in the composition embodied the idea of nature and fertility. It featured personifications of heaven and earth, the latter being depicted with the fruits she brings forth. The waters were embodied by the figures of both Okeanos and Thalassa, plus Bythos. Cosmos and Physis were apparently seen in a prominent location within the picture. Great emphasis was placed on personifications alluding to the progression of time and the cyclic renewal of nature embodied, for instance, by the depiction of the bird Phoenix and most manifest in the figures of the four seasons and the hours of the day. The picture contained a remarkable array of figures embodying the natural changes in daylight, including Eos, Phosphoros, Orthros, Anatoly, who, joined by Iris, found their counterparts in the figures of the evening, the night, and the moon. The four winds were joined by several personifications embodying adverse weather conditions. The majority of the figures once seen in the composition belong to the repertoire of ancient myths, and many iconographical details described by John find close parallels in the visual arts of antiquity, as Friedländer, Kramer, and others have demonstrated based on the ekphrasis and visual comparisons. What has puzzled practically all scholars who have investigated the Cosmicos Pinax is the fact that John of Gaza explicitly refers to a number of Christian elements that were seen or even highlighted within the composition. Curiously, while at least some authors have acknowledged their factual presence, no one has attempted to interpret them within the larger cultural frame of late antiquity and visual culture. The majority of scholars have simply chosen to deny that Christian motifs could possibly have been present in a depiction belonging to the realm of paganism. Others suggested that John may simply have invented these details to please a Christian audience. Yet others claimed that John must have misunderstood certain iconographic features, possibly because the picture was partly damaged or difficult to see at the time when he drew up his description. Some of those who were inclined to acknowledge the factual presence of Christian features in the composition purported that they might represent later insertions into a composition of earlier date. At least one detail of the composition which was understood by John in the Christian sense must in fact have been quite conspicuous, namely a golden cross placed in a blue circle. Its lengthy description, comprising a total of 25 verses, is found at the very beginning of the ekphrasis, and it is explicitly introduced as, quote, the symbol of the salvific passion of Christ. This cross is described with sufficient precision as being composed of a long vertical axis that was crossed by a shorter horizontal one. It was surrounded by a circular shape identified by John as the heavenly sphere, which was composed of three circles colored in different shades of blue, a detail which, according to the author, alluded to the Holy Trinity. Given the prominence accorded to the cross in the ekphrasis, it is surprising that both early reconstruction drawings render it in a smallish size, with one offered by Friedländer somewhat awkwardly relegating the cross to a marginal position at the very bottom of the composition. All scholars today agree that Cramer's reconstruction is more accurate in situating the cross at the center of a composition of circular shape, which in the building supposedly adorned a dome. According to John's description, the cross must have had a dominant position within the composition. It might have been as large as proposed more recently in a reconstruction drawing of this detail by Luc Rinaud. Numerous depictions survive from late antiquity which closely resemble the design described by John of Gaza. It appears to have conformed rather well to pictorial traditions in Christian iconography that may be traced back to at least the 5th century. A mosaic in the baptistery of Albenga offers an early example of a sphere colored in three shades of blue, which are, for instance, also found in the apse mosaic of St. Catherine's on Mount Sinai, in this case together with a cross. Regarding its shape, the one seen in Gaza must have resembled crosses as preserved, for instance, in the mosaics of Hagia Sophia. Friedländer was among the few authors who did not question the presence of iconographical features inspired by early Christian art in the cosmos image at Gaza. Yet he remained puzzled in view of what he termed an intrusion of this entirely alien symbol into a composition firmly rooted in the iconographic tradition of Hellenism. Some scholars following him have neglected the Christian connotations of the cross altogether, trying to explain it as a merely decorative feature or as a cosmic symbol in the Neoplatonic tradition. It must be said, though, that we have no surviving evidence for such a pictorial context. The cross set against circles colored in shades of blue, which finds numerous parallels in early Christian art, is to my knowledge not encountered in monument of pagan origin. I would thus suggest that the depiction of the cross that occupied a prominent position in the cosmological image was intended by its creator as the Christian symbol for which John of Gaza took it. Another prominent feature of the composition was a set of at least 7 winged figures, explicitly termed angels by John. Here, too, some scholars have negated a Christian association in claiming that John must have mistaken as angels winged deities or personifications of classical origin. This suggestion would seem to hold some appeal given the fact that many of the personifications depicted at Gaza were indeed equipped with wings, according to a well-established iconographic tradition. However, John describes, along with the figures of the angels, attributes that are difficult to reconcile with pagan tradition, but are typical of depictions of angels in Christian iconography from the early centuries on. At least one of the angels in the Gaza image carried a cross, and another one was holding a globe. Both symbols, as supported by angels, are well attested in early Christian art, and I illustrate this with just one example from Byzantium. In his reconstruction drawing, Gerhard Kramer situated three of the angels rather conspicuously on the axis of the composition, but it must be said that the ekphrasis is not helpful as to the precise location of altogether at least seven angels that were seen in the composition. Again, while acknowledging that the image of the cosmos seen at Gaza was predominantly made up of figures firmly rooted in the iconographic tradition of paganism, I cannot follow those scholars who either denied the presence of Christian features in the picture or downplayed their significance. Those who have focused their studies specifically on matters of iconography have postulated for the composition a date of origin in the 5th century or later, arguing that certain iconographical features are not encountered before roughly 400 AD. The picture would thus have been created after the official establishment of Christianity in Gaza, and it is feasible that this fact would have found a visual expression in an elaborate work of art commissioned for a public location. The Christian elements would have underscored for the viewer that this image meant to depict an allegory of the world and was by no means intended to honor pagan deities. At a time of transition, one would of course have reverted to long established, thus familiar iconographic formulas to render a depiction of the universe. That the latter was created and is governed by the Christian God was underscored by eye-catching iconographical details, above all by the golden cross depicted in a prominent location. The description of the Cosmikos Pinax by John of Gaza reveals the riches we have lost. It is likely that depictions similar to the one in the winter baths of Gaza were more widespread, but given its complexity, and the fact that at least one elaborate ekphrasis was composed in its honor, it must in its time have been regarded as an especially outstanding work of art. The rich array of visual allegories described by John of Gaza in its impressive complexity remains without close parallels in late antique art. However, the floor mosaic excavated on the site of a Roman villa at Merida, which depicted about 40 personifications to represent the cosmos, proves that similarly elaborate compositions of the same topic were a reality in the late Roman world. It is impossible to tell whether complex allegories of the cosmos, such as one described by John of Gaza, were a widespread feature of the figural decoration of Roman and late antique baths. However, one testimony of later date might suggest that in the Near East there indeed existed a tradition of visualizing topics from the realm of cosmology in such buildings. On a much smaller scale, in a private hammam, is preserved a rare fresco of the zodiac. It was painted in the early 8th century in the dome of the Caldarium that belonged to the desert castle of Kasr Amra in Jordan. What appears to be a rare feature of the picture once seen in Gaza is the interspersion of Christian motifs into a composition dominated by iconographic elements rooted in the classical tradition. This phenomenon is without obvious parallels, and I would surmise that the lack of comparisons has contributed to the reluctance in scholarship to accept the Christian features described in the ekphrasis as an iconographic reality of the image. Yet again, I find this attitude surprising because in the Christian realm, the integration of foreign, more concretely pagan, elements into works of art was a matter of course from the very beginnings. The presence in Christian images of figures borrowed from the arts of paganism has rarely troubled scholars and may in fact be observed in a multitude of examples. As is known, this phenomenon is by no means limited to the period of late antiquity, but is a continuing and frequently encountered feature of Christian art throughout the Middle Ages, both in Byzantium and in the Latin West. To illustrate this, I show you a miniature from the famous Paris Psalter, where the prophet Isaiah is seen praying to God, accompanied by personifications of Nyx and Otros, serving to signal the time of the day. In an Ottonian gospel book, which you see on the right, personifications of the earth and the ocean in the lower register join the Christ child in his crib, with Christ in majesty occupying the upper zone. These miniatures are examples of much later dates that may illustrate the persistence in the Christian era of motifs that originated in the realm of classical myths and survived many centuries practically unchanged. Closer in time to the creation of the cosmos picture in Gaza is a large textile measuring over 5 meters in length and probably originating from Egypt, which displays paintings illustrating stories from the Old Testament. The first picture shows Adam, newly created, who gazes at a figure equipped with butterfly wings approaching him. It is a personification of his soul that was obviously derived from typical pagan depictions of the souls of men. Here and elsewhere in early Christian art, the ancient personification was chosen to illustrate the narration of how Adam received the breath of life from God. A work that I believe is crucial for the discussion of the Cosmikos Pinax, but whose significance for the cultural context has been underestimated, is the Cotton Genesis, once a richly illustrated Greek manuscript of the Book of Genesis. Produced in the later 5th century in the Eastern Mediterranean, it must have been among the most splendid books produced during the early Byzantine period. Today, it survives in a deplorable state after being damaged by a fire in the London Library of Sir Robert Cotton. Aside from charred fragments, we have a facsimile of the miniature illustrating the creation of the plants, which was painted before the fire. 3 winged figures wearing peploi were added to personify the 3rd day of creation. Similar figures augmenting in number to a total of 7 were also found in the miniatures illustrating the other days of the Hexameron. We know this from the surviving fragments and from the Genesis cycle in the atrium of the Church of St. Mark's in Venice. Interestingly, the latter during the 13th century was copied on mosaic from the miniatures contained in the early Byzantine Cotton Genesis. I have shown elsewhere that the winged figures personifying the days of the creation of the world in the Cotton Genesis are by no means angels, as has been proposed by various scholars. Their iconography was clearly derived from pagan myth and allegory, illustrating ideas of time and light, particularly Eos, the goddess of dawn or daylight, accompanied by the hours. These pagan deities and related ones that were frequently depicted in the arts of Hellenism provided the key inspiration for the personifications of the days of the biblical Hexameron. The personifications embodying the days of creation share certain iconographical features with their classical models, especially as regards their dress, peploi, which characterize them as figures of female gender. They are thus clearly not angels, who are generally understood as males and are depicted in the visual arts accordingly, with male dress, wearing a tunic and pallium without exception. Curiously, despite the fundamental discrepancies between the personified days of creation and angels, scholars resist accepting the fact that figures derived from pagan myth could be integrated into the Christian iconography of the Cotton Genesis. Evidently, the situation is reminiscent of the negative attitudes encountered among modern scholars in regard to the presence of Christian motifs in the Cosmikos Pinax at Gaza. The Cotton Genesis and other Christian works of art that are close in date to the lost allegorical picture once seen in Gaza suggest the following. Iconographical features associated with pagan polytheism could easily be borrowed to enrich images belonging to the Christian realm. Vice versa, figures of Christian connotation migrated into compositions whose iconography was otherwise exclusively determined by the visual traditions developed in the world of paganism. All of this might sound self-evident, yet apparently it is not. The bewilderment prevalent in scholarship as regards phenomena of borrowing and exchange present in the visual arts of late antiquity seems to reveal more about modern expectations and attitudes than about the realities of the time. A fresh look at the ekphrasis by John of Gaza offers important insight into phenomena of cultural continuity and change in late antiquity and complements observations made in relation to works of art which still exist. The text thus underscores the flexibility that is typical of late antiquity regarding the integration or rather appropriation of traditions belonging to different cultural and religious contexts. Thank you very much.